Hello, welcome to the Comic Connoisseur. Tonight we'll be talking about WandaVision, Disney Plus's first Marvel series. Of course, I'm my host, Jason from Saskatoon.
There were no demonic deals made in the recording of this broadcast.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Where the fuck was Doctor Strange in all this?
That's the question that's going to keep on appearing the longer and the longer the MCU runs. So we watched all 9 episodes of WandaVision, Disney Plus's series about Wanda and Vision. It takes place after Avengers Endgame. I'll give it this. I wanted to watch the next episode every time, but I didn't like it, and I didn't hate it. I was not hate watching it, at least not until the end. When it got to the end, my eyes rolled quite a bit at the end, but it at least kept me interested. JT?
I liked it. I mean, there were certain bits, like them basing, like, the first few episodes based around certain sitcoms. Like, I enjoyed that riff. I had made a couple of call-outs that couple of them paid out, couple of them didn't, and overall I think it was a pretty decent series. Red?
First three episodes weren't that great for me. I'm not a fan of classic sitcoms. They bore the shit out of me. And there was nothing that was really advancing the plot. But as it went on, as somebody who has been taught how to write and stuff like that, I saw certain things that I thought were going to happen. Like, if somebody was clever, they could put in this twist, and it didn't fucking happen. All I got was what I thought was going to be entertaining, full of plot twists and maybe guest stars, turned out to be just a meh script.
Yeah. I think Red touches an interesting point, because while I do have, like, a nostalgia for, like, the Nick at Night, the old Dick Van Dyke and stuff like that, it also dragged on way too long. It, like, the first 3 to 4 episodes could be condensed to just a framing device. It's like an exercise in excess. Like, we can do this, so we will. Versus, you know, maybe time constraints will tell us we shouldn't do this. We should just pare this down to just a framing device. Get going, because the plot really started taking off when you did the episode on the other side of the hex, where you had Darcy coming in with Monica Rambeau trying to, like, you know, all that stuff. That stuff was good stuff. Then because the actress who plays Darcy was entertaining. You had Asian Jim, who did a pretty good job, too. You had Monica Rambeau, her actress, was fantastic.
I have to explain why you call him Asian Jim.
Because his character's name is Jim, and he's Asian.
His name is Jimmy Woo, and you damn well know it.
No. You're making a reference to the fucking Office. When Jim was replaced by the actor for, like, an episode just to fuck with Dwight. Like, he even took a picture, a family fucking photo, to fuck with Dwight.
All right.
I actually didn't catch that. I've never watched an episode of The Office in my life.
Anyways, all that stuff was good. The whole build-up, the whole watching it from the other side. I found it more interesting watching them watching the show from the other side than watching the show. Because, again, it works great as a framing device. Fantastic as a framing device. But to sit through it, to going through the decades, it is weird. Monotonous, even.
Me, go ahead. While I was watching it, I detected a different script altogether. This was not meant to be a TV series. Somebody made a Scarlet Witch movie, and Disney shot it down, but said, hey, maybe we can turn this into a TV series. We've got Disney Plus coming out. Let's just stretch it out way too much.
I think it always was a TV show, but I kind of agree with you, Red, that you could have trimmed probably about 3 episodes and still gotten most of the what they were going for with the script here. Like, I grew up, I love, and I still love watching, like, old black and white, you know, like, I Love Lucy and the Dick Van Dyke Show, because I've always enjoyed watching that old school television, because they're like plays, and I've always enjoyed watching that sort of stuff. But you could have really condensed what the first one episode right here. The 70s one, you could have almost cut out the 70s one altogether, except they were really hung up on that framing device, which I loved. And that was the first thing that I made a call on watching this, is I figured in one of the later episodes, and this was confirmed, that Wanda grew up watching sitcoms and she's kind of a nerd for them. Like, it's that comfort food, because we see in the, was it the 8th episode? Yeah, the 8th episode, where they do the flashbacks through Wanda's history. And as a little kid, English, watching sitcoms, and her face, she likes the old school ones too, like the Dick Van Dyke Show, which was my favorite bit, where you go back to Sokovia and Pietro's like, oh, not again. Stuff like that I really enjoyed. And yeah, like, as far as goes, I think it really worked.
JT,
in,
you're roboting really badly. We only cut like one out of every 4 words.
I'm doing it on purpose. I'm not doing it on purpose, Ben, so I have no control over that.
I'm not saying you're doing it on purpose. It's just happening.
No, I'm just saying I'm not doing it on purpose. As far as the sitcom framing thing, I think that scene, episode 6, All New Halloween Spooktacular, the Malcolm in the Middle episode, that one was a lot of fun. And, you know, because that's right after them bringing in Pietro, you know, it's Evan Peters from the Fox X-Men movies, which sadly, it, as a lot of people are saying, oh, it's, this is how we introduce mutants, this is how we, it was like, no, it's something very much indicative of sitcom stunt casting.
JT, maybe you should leave the call and come back in.
All right.
All right. Well, that was really for JT to resettle in. I apologize.
How do
there,
I
folks.
Sound?
We'll see if this is any better, but let's go
all
forth.
Right. Like I said, the stunt casting, it's like that's all it turned out to be, although aside from the Malcolm in the Middle episode, they didn't really give Pierce a lot to do. He was wasted. It's part of the series.
JT, this is getting worse. So do you have a phone? Can you call it on your phone?
Anything running on my phone right now?
Can you call on your phone?
Yeah, but then that eats into my data. Give me a sec here.
Again, we're sorry, folks. It's technical problems.
All right.
Okay.
How's it going?
Maybe you should move the your mouth away from the phone by a couple inches.
How's this?
You are legible, but you're much more staticky, so... Let's just try. Okay, what were you saying, JT?
I was saying Evan Peters was wasted in his role in this show. He turns out to be this random dude who is Agnes's husband, Ralph. And yeah, that was about it. Because
It wasn't her husband. It was she moved into the house next door, and Ralph just happened to live there.
Well, how Agnes is always my husband, Ralph. Like that.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, the husband, you know, Ralph doesn't matter because it's the cliche of the nosy neighbor all the way from Ethel Mertz. You know, always has
one of the things I do want to point out before we lose the subject.
Yes.
Is two things. You brought out how mutants were not introduced. Mutants were actually introduced if you paid attention. Wanda had powers before they were enhanced. That was pointed out very clearly. It's probably that in the Marvel MCU, mutant powers are not what we think they are. They're just, maybe they fade away, as Agnes said it, as you grow up, so eventually just fade away on the vine. The other thing is, the main writer, I saw an interview with him, he pointed out that he wanted to fuck with the audience, and that's why he had Evan Peters be hired to replace Pietro and all that shit, because he wanted to subvert expectations. And I fucking hate that word so much, that phrase. It seems to be popular in writing these days. I don't know why. Everybody fucking hates it, but people like to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, okay, when I said they didn't introduce mutants, I mean, just how a lot of people hung, oh my God, they're going to introduce mutants because they had Evan Peters in there. But yeah, and I like that they have, you know, the bomb didn't explode because Wanda just naturally hexed it like that. And I think from what I've seen with some other theory videos I've seen on YouTube and other people talking about...
The page chills.
What's that?
The paid shills.
I'm sure they're not all paid shills, Ben, but if I may continue. The idea is with mutants is like, yeah, there's these mutation is in the blood, but it's for some reason, instead of the just emotional stress like in the comics, they're gonna need, you know, this outward stimulus, like, you know, which is gone into a theory that I've made before, that, you know, all the multiple snaps from the Infinity Gauntlet will play into that somewhat, I'm sure.
I actually think they opened up a way for mutants to exist, and that's bringing Captain America back into the 20s and back into the 40s.
Yeah.
Like, it's something from Ultimate Marvel, where instead of Captain America, it was actually Wolverine. But it was his influence that spread the mutant gene around.
Now, there's different things that they can do with that. Personally, this is how I view it. People would have loved and instantly said, okay, they're introducing the multiverse, they're introducing mutants with bringing Evan Peters. Great. This is what I think. I think that... that Marvel and Kevin Feige don't want to be put into a box this early. They have the rights, they have the licenses, they have all the ability to do mutants however they want. Next week they could say, okay, we're doing an X-Men Disney Plus show, it's going to be exactly this. They could say, oh, we're doing the X-Men movie, it's going to be a continuation of the Fox movies, but we're going to merge the universes. They could say whatever they want. But I also think that because Kevin has gone on record saying that the X-Men and mutants are the furthest from his mind right now. Same with, not as much with Fantastic Four, but with mutants, he says, oh, well, we don't even have anything planned for 5 years, is what I believe he said. Red can correct me on that. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that they're not going to introduce any solid concepts right now, simply because they don't want to paint the directors they haven't even hired yet into a box.
No, that's fair. I mean, if they don't have any plans for, you know, 5+ years, that makes sense. But I mean, they're seeding, you know, they're just what do you call it? Chum in the Waters or something like that. It's like when they added the Nick Fury scene at the end of the first Iron Man. You know, it's all set up from here until they're ready to introduce, like, hey, here's the X-Men.
Okay, I got to correct you on that. The Nick Fury scene at the end of Iron Man was a teaser for sure, but they didn't have any idea what the MCU would be at that point. All they wanted to do was tease that there was going to be an MCU. And
that's what I'm saying, Ben. It's a tease until they actually put something more concrete down on paper.
I do have a theory that they are, like, for one thing, they're doing a Deadpool movie. They're still doing Deadpool.
Yes.
It's been announced.
Yes.
I believe they're going to introduce Wolverine before they introduce the X-Men.
Well, absolutely. Wolverine prints money.
I mean, he prints money, and it's also a character, you know, he can be a part of, like, this untold chapter of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s history. He could have been this, like, weird knuckle-dragging Canadian soldier that the Howling Commandos ran into during World War II. I mean, based Lucky on his Jimmy? Powers and... What's that?
Lucky Jimmy?
Yeah. Like, you can use Wolverine because benefit of his character, narratively speaking, like, if you look at the comics, like, he's 200 plus years old, so that's why he can be associated with so many different characters and situations in the Marvel Universe. So if I agree with that theory that if they introduce the first character, the first mutant they introduce like that, it would be Wolverine. But, you know, getting back to, you know, WandaVision, besides the sitcom thing, the two things that I called that came true is, like, and this is just benefit of me reading way too many comics and watching way too much TV, as soon as I saw Agnes, I called that, like, you're gonna be Agatha Harkness. Not that I knew her name was a portmanteau of the character's name, it's just looking at her, looking how she acted, I was like, if there was ever a time to introduce that character, would be now. Although when you see her in her witch robes there in the last couple episodes, I thought they were going to do some weird twist and call her Morgan Le Fay, because looking at that costuming that they gave Catherine Hahn, totally looks like the colors and the way it, you know, billowed in the wind and all that, it looked like something Morgan Le Fay would be wearing, at least from various comics I've read in the Marvel history.
Depends on if you're going with Morgan Le Fay from DC or Marvel.
Well, Marvel.
Because Morgan Le Fay in Marvel is traditionally, she wears green, not purple. Purple is the DC version.
Yeah. No, like Morgan Le Fay, she's kind of got red hair, and she's usually got like some green slinky dress that has got this deep cut all the way down to, you know, the Uncanny Valley. And, the other thing, and I'm throwing up my hands. I'm throwing in the towel. I am enjoy this, boys. You were right. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't in the MCU.
Joss Whedon said that in the first season.
Yeah, but I defended that when we talked about the end of it. And if you listen carefully, folks, you can hear Ben wringing his hands and chuckling to himself right now. That being said, because the third thing that I called that was going to be in here, because it makes sense, because, you know, Kevin Feige and the director, was it Matt Shakman, and one of the showrunners said, like, this is going to tie into, kind of lead the way into Multiverse of Madness and Doctor Strange 2. And when I heard, you know, Wanda's going to be in that movie, and we got this, I was like, we're going to have the Darkhold. And we got the Darkhold. And I'm glad they gave it a different design, and they didn't just, like, copy and paste the design, because you saw the Darkhold in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then you see it in, I think it was the Runaways. They just used the same prop. It's like in that god-awful Tom Cruise mummy movie, and they had the Book of Life from the Brendan Fraser movies. Like, they just used the same prop. But, you know, we got the Darkhold, which opens the way to K'Thon or other Doctor Strange villains, like, was it Shuma Gorath, who's, you know, it's Cthulhu, except not, because litigation.
Oh, the Cthulhu is totally what's it called? Open right now. But anyway,
yeah, Doctor Strange fought Cthulhu before.
But
I thought it was always he just fought Shuma Gorath, who's like this weird cycloptic octopoid of a demon.
Shuma Gorath is fucking weird because he's a space demon. He's not.
He's not a Mephistic. But anyways, I just feel like the stuff that was really strongest for me at the, you know, at the beginning, Mark, was definitely the stuff with the people outside the Hex. Because we got instantly what was going inside the Hex. I wanted to see. One thing I have to add, though, is the sword director was very, very one-dimensional, snidely whiplash, mustache twirling. And just no depth at all to that.
Yeah.
You can tell he was a bad guy right away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We got the villain. We got the vision. We were studying him, and there's fucking sentinels in the background while he's saying this.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that they talked about how the Vision has a last will and testament saying he doesn't want to be reactivated, and like, so what are these sword guys doing, like tearing apart and shit? They're not gonna bury him. It just seemed really suspicious to me. Like I wanted to do the whole excuse me, sir. So if his last will said not to reactivate him, what are you guys doing?
Well, that goes to why Hayward got arrested at the end there, because he's basically, by experimenting with the Vision and trying to, like, we got White Vision, and that scene with his parts straight out, that's straight out of Vision Quest, out of West Coast Avengers. He violated the Accords and tried to create his own super being, and he was ignoring the law. Like, you know, he has this will that says, I just want to be buried. And he's like, what, you think I'm going to let 30 billion worth of Vibranian just lie there in the ground? Like, this guy was in it for himself. And of course he got busted. But and as one dimensional as his villainy was, and until you know the score with how he was rebuilding the Vision and trying to, you know, use his position to, you know, to the fullest effect to benefit himself. One thing I had a suspicion, if the way he reacted to Wanda in that first episode, I think it's episode 4, where we're in the real world, and he's just like, you almost want, I thought he was going to just spit out the words, filthy fucking mutant. Like, he just looked like he was ready to go full Friends of Humanity with the way he was talking about Wanda, but you find out that isn't it, because it's really, he didn't want her futzing with his plans to cash in on the Vision.
And look, I feel like really he is a really one-dimensional villain. Nothing against the actor. I don't blame the actor at all on this. But it's just his dialogue is snidely whiplashy. His personality, his motivations are snidely whiplashy. The only thing that makes me question anything is the fact that he brings up to Wanda resurrecting Vision to it, like, As if it's like, is that the script over there? Or did someone whisper that idea into his head? And I know what people are going to go, Mephisto, Mephisto. I'm like, no, don't go there. Don't go there. That's a trap.
I think he was purposely trying to piss off Wanda as just so he has a scapegoat for when he rolls out, version 2.0 there. I mean, everyone was saying because of the West Coast Avengers comics and Wanda's children revealed to be like shards of the demon Mephisto's soul, people were just screaming that, oh yeah, Mephisto's in here. And it's like, no, the real big bad of this series is grief. And Wanda is not, she is a hero. She is not the hero of this story. It's just this woman that's,
she's not a hero anymore, dude. Like, you can't.
If I could finish.
Okay.
It's like, she's a hero. Like, she's been a hero. She's very clearly not a hero anymore because, you know, however justifiable in her grief, you know, her trying to process this, that doesn't excuse her brainwashing and, you know, rewriting reality over this town. There's no excuse for that.
So you're saying it's not justified by grief.
When it came to brainwashing and stuff like that, I honestly thought it was going to be somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I heard this was tied into the multiverse and into the multiverse and Doctor Strange. So I'm like, who could do something like this? Who is a Doctor Strange villain that would do something like this? And might have a connection to Wanda. Like, this might be Clea. And I thought for sure that the blonde chick, like the one from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, was going to be Clea.
Yeah. I'd seen a bunch of theory articles and such that, based on what her real name was, is that's the same civilian identity as Arcana from the Squadron Supreme. Because, like, her husband has this... I think it's very much a reference to that, but I don't think they plan to do anything with that. It's just, hey, here's an Easter egg for you diehard comic fans. Yeah. You know, they could... Clea's... I hadn't even thought of Clea Red. I was thinking, like I said, Shuma Gorath or Nightmare or the author of the Darkhold itself, K'thon, because, you know, when we see Wanda at the end, she's sitting in this little cabin, which is so totally meant... Like, you got the wards on it, but, I mean, I was getting Evil Dead vibes off that. And we see her pulling a Doctor Strange, you know, she's sipping on her tea, and then she's astral projecting and studying from the Darkhold, which... If our listeners don't know, if you use any spell out of the dark hole, your soul is forfeit. And, you know, that's going to lead into Multiverse of Madness. I think that mound she was at, like, she is outside Mount Wundagore, which is very much a physical anchor point for the Elder God K'thon in the Marvel Comics.
So does this mean High Evolutionary?
I hope they don't fucking go there.
No,
that is a dumb fucking path to follow, and there's nothing to be fucking gained.
Yeah, and also that was one of the dumbest fan theories I read about, because there was the black guy Herb that everyone was like, oh, Herbert Windham, High Evolutionary, and that spun off into the Westview was really the MCU version of that Avengers Pleasant Hill crossover from a few years ago, where you got all these brainwashed supervillains. And as part of me, as much as I would have loved something like that, I was like, no. It's not that I'm a huge High Evolutionary fan, but knowing what I know about the character and its history, that there is no way you could truncate that character into this rando next door to Vision and Wanda. I'm sorry. That's just not going to work.
The show feels weird, and I think that is a phrase I'm going to keep on repeating over and over again. The show feels weird. I get what they were doing with the whole changing of the decades, because we had I Love Lucy, we had Dick Van Dyke, we had Brady Bunch, we had Family Ties, we had Full House, we had Malcolm
in the Middle. We didn't have Full House.
Okay, we had Malcolm in the Middle, we had Modern Family, like, but it doesn't feel... Because it keeps changing, the jarringness of it takes you out of it too much. A television show requires a little bit more cohesion, a little bit something that brings it all together and is the focus point for the audience. What I will say is I did enjoy a little bit of the Halloween episode, not a lot, because Evan Peters is only doing what he's given. And he's doing a pretty good, typical crazy uncle from out of town guest character on one of those sitcoms. But at the same time, he's way too deep into it. He's, you know, we're going to do shaving cream. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then the point where he's outright like, you know, your dead husband can't die twice. Like, it's so over the top.
Well, and I mean, that's all part of, you know, Agnes's or Agatha's plot to, you know, divine how Wanda was able to do this, which, yeah, I mean, doesn't make sense, kind of makes sense, but again, comics, you know, going back to that Malcolm in the Middle, like, I love the fact in that episode, like, I've always liked in sitcoms when characters break the fourth wall, so I enjoyed Billy and Tommy, you know, breaking it like that, Billy gets his very loose interpretation of his Wiccan costume for his Halloween costume. And in the following episodes, you know, Tommy gets like the green jumper. So that's like, you know, denotes him becoming Speed in the Young Avengers. Yeah. The crazy uncle thing was fun, but I love the breadcrumbs of, you know, little by little. It's like, is Wanda really in charge? Is there, you know, they played with, you know, is Wanda really responsible? And yes, she is, but even she doesn't know what she's doing because her head is so messed up because, you know, she, I thought that letter on her seat in the eighth episode was like a spell from the Darkhold. And then you find it's the deed to the plot where their house is. And that's like the straw that broke the camel's back. And she just tore a hole in reality and rewrote everything.
I gotta be honest with you about that. I just felt like that was there to be there. And I also felt like also you say Wanda doesn't know what she's doing.
Well, not really knows what she's doing.
I totally disagree. She at one point knew that she was responsible for this because there was a scene where she walks out of the hex carrying the drone and throwing it for like you left this here, and she was full bitch mode there. She said, "I got what I want," is what she told Haywood. She also went back full thick Sokovian accent too in that speech. So it was. So I think she knew what she was doing, at least at that point onward. So you can't go with Stricken with Grief, just found yourself in a mystical world, is like, I'll go with it. No, at from that point forward, when she threw the drone forward, she knew what she was doing.
I agree, disagree. I think what it is she knew she was responsible, but she didn't understand what she had done. That sort of thing. Like, clearly she knew she's responsible for this. She doesn't know how she did this, you know, and it took the first three episodes before the cracks started to appear. And just like when you look at like the third episode, was that was the 70s one, right? Yeah. I gotta give it up to the production staff for this series, like costuming, lighting. Like in the first episode where Vision's boss has the heart attack, and I watched that twice before I really noticed it, that where it goes from him having the heart attack and on the floor, and all of a sudden, like, the aspect ratio changed just that little bit, the lighting changed, you know, and because they took great care with the whole sitcom setup to really make those bits look like, you know, this is the Dick Van Dyke Show, this is Family Ties, this is Malcolm in the Middle. There was a lot of care taken with shooting this series, which I think is my favorite, and I think it's the best part of this, is the dedication that the production staff took with this show. Now, the one thing I'm going to ask you guys remember the commercials they had in the first, like, few episodes, right?
That was a waste.
They were connected to Wanda's past in one of those commercials.
Yeah, and most of the commercials are tied to specific Infinity Stones.
Okay, here is my question. Would you lose anything from this if you remove the commercials?
No, it would. I just appreciated that.
Okay. Yeah, I know Red's going to sigh here, but...
In my opinion, you could lose 90% of the show, reduce it down to 2 hours.
Yes.
And not change anything.
Right. And the commercials could easily be jettisoned because I understand what they were doing, but at the same time, it was excessive. It was to do it because we can do it, not because it serviced the story. Reminds me of, like, when the Watchmen movie came out, there was a minority of fans that said, oh, you had to put in the Black Freighter. Oh, my God, you have to intercede every part of the movie with the Black Freighter. And I'm like, no. Are you insane?
I mean, it builds on the world, that, speaking about the Black Freighter, but you absolutely don't lose anything. you know, if you cut stuff out.
It's because the Watchmen movie was a scene for scene, shot for shot recreation of the comic. So people wanted more. They wanted the whole comic recreated.
Yeah.
Including the printouts from Newsweek.
They should have just said shut up and moved on with their lives, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, like I said, just the commercials, you know, they reference, you know, these moments, significant traumas in Wanda's life, although I don't think a lot of people watching this show caught that the way I did. And
oh, look, you're special. You have secret knowledge.
I'm merely reflecting on the point that a lot of people probably didn't get that. And just to me, all I'm saying.
To me, the commercials were red herrings.
Yeah.
Because they seemed like clues to what was going on. Yeah. Then you bring in the beekeeper and all that shit, and people are like, oh, it's fucking AIM. AIM's behind all this. No, it's just a red herring. It's just there to fuck with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been cool if it turned out to be, like, you know, beekeeper, evil scientist AIM instead of, you know, Aldrich Killian, I am the Mandarin AIM. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, honestly, the only commercial that really was, it was, again, maybe too subtle or something. I mean, that's not exactly for me to decide. But the Yo Magic yogurt commercial, I mean, that's very much a direct clue to what, you know, Agatha tries to do with Wanda's power in the final episode. How she's just trying to suck up all that sweet, sweet chaos magic. And, you know, use it in whatever nefarious scheme she had planned.
See, that's something else that really was weird about this. Let me just ask the question to the audience here, and then also to my co-hosts. Before the episode where Agatha goes through Wanda's past, and do you think Agatha knew Wanda was the Scarlet Witch as foretold in the ancient prophecy?
I think she suspected, but she still needed confirmation.
I don't think she knew.
Yeah. This is my personal take on just how they played it. Agatha sensed a disturbance in the force and decided to see what's going on with this very powerful, young, inexperienced witch. Inserts herself into the hex and is just trying to figure out ways to figure out why Wanda is doing this, how she's doing this. Like she like throughout everything when she's playing Agnes the Nosy Neighbor, she's trying to like inject situations and things to see how Wanda reacts. She's testing her, constantly testing her. And then finally, she's like, okay, you know what? We're going to go through this now. And she even says, you know, the best medicine is bitter. It is written as if we're supposed to believe that she's trying to help Wanda until she finds out that she is the Scarlet Witch. It almost feels like the episode where the reruns happen in the next episode are written by two different writers. It almost feels like that because the reaction I got from watching that is, I'm trying to help this young witch figure out who she is. Holy shit, she's the prophesized Doombringer. I gotta end her. And the next episode is, no, I want to steal her power. It's weird.
I disagree with that, Ben. I don't. The only time that she even sounds like what you thought you were the only magic user in this town, that's literally the only time that anyone could take things to think that Agatha was there to help her. She's very clearly got a plan other than helping Wanda. Like I said, I think she had a theory. It's like she could be the one, but I have to know for sure. And that's why she was, you know, doing everything. Again, in episode 8, I don't care what you say. I love the Agatha All Along song. And the fact that it's very clearly done in the style of the Munsters theme music, which is one of my all-time favorite sitcoms from when I was a kid.
The Monsters.
We're not going there, but
what time you say it right?
that show with the dude from Car 54. She was never going to help Wanda. She just wanted to know, you know, what the deal was, and then she was going to take that power, which leads into the two times she says this in the final episode, you have no idea what you've unleashed. Like, you know, is that, you know, she, whatever big bad, like, just to use Shuma Gorath just as a placeholder, like, I think what the events of this leading into Doctor Strange, the events of this series have let loose this great big bad that's going to be responsible for the events of Multiverse of Madness, and Wanda's going to play some role in resolving that. And then you have, like, what everyone's like, oh my god, she's going to create the multiverse to find this world where her sons are alive. And I was like, yeah, I think that's, not saying it's not within her power, I just think it's, narratively speaking, not something the writers are capable of crafting very well. You know, it's a tease going into that movie, and that's going to be like the carrot on the stick that's leading Wanda along.
I honestly don't think there was a plan with Agatha. She was just there.
All right. But, okay, go ahead.
I got to ask you, what was her plan? Why was she there?
She said so. She detected the hex and she wanted to know what was going on. And I mean, it's not very clear, but I think somewhere along the way she decided, well, I'm just going to take this bitch's power and do what I want.
I'll do what I want.
Like Ben said, it's a strange change in the middle of the narrative that she's trying to help her. Then she finds out that she's a Scarlet Witch. She's trying to destroy her. Then she's like, oh, I want her powers. She's all over the fucking place. I don't think the writers knew what to do with her.
Yeah.
I think the writers... Sorry, Red, you go.
No, that's my point, is I don't think the writers had a plan. I don't think they knew what to do with her. I think somebody just read the fucking comic where Agatha appears and helps Wanda learn how to use her fucking abilities better. Said, hey, we can use her, and none of the fucking writers talk to each other. Is she a villain? Is she a good guy? I don't think there's any communication in the fucking writers' room.
Well, I think it's a lot simpler than that. I think they intended to have, like, Agatha there when she knows Wanda has all this power, that she's going to take this thing. They just had a massive brain fart and didn't write in like that one line of dialogue to mention that. So, I did like, for a lot of the callbacks and shout outs to like Marvel Comics history that they had in this show, like when you see the runes in Agatha's basement lair, there's that one that, looks like a double M, which I was like, okay, that could be like a nod to Magneto, or it's probably just a rune. I appreciated that. I like the name. Her familiar, Senor Scratchy, I think is a call out to not just one of the many nicknames for the Devil is Old Scratch. It might be a callback to Nicholas Scratch, who is Agatha's son in the comics. You know, and you know, we talk all this about the magic things. We haven't mentioned anything about Monica Rambeau.
By far the best character they introduced in this thing. Actress is fantastic. Character is well done. One thing that I do have a gripe with the character Monica is I understand that she is coming from the same place Wanda is, from a position of grief, position of this woman is grieving. I have to help her. I understand it. Totally get it. But at the same time, you're at this position where the grieving witch is also mind-fucking a whole town and is causing bedlam and chaos. There are better ways to handle it. And I have to also add to this, Monica's whole arc was built of, I have to help her. And in the end, Wanda helps herself more than anything else. All Monica did was slow down some bullets.
Pretty cool effect when that happened, though.
Monica, in my opinion, was, what do you call it?
Wasted?
An editor's fucking choice. Like, somebody came in and said, we have to do something with Monica. Here's what we're going to do. Put her in the fucking show. Because yeah. she's the only one, in my opinion, has the strongest fucking storyline.
Yes.
Out of anybody. And there's reason for that. It's because I think she was mandated to be in the show and have this fucking storyline where she gets her powers and stuff like that. Yeah.
There was some in the script, a couple things involving Monica that I feel did not make a lot of sense. Like, according to what, from what I've read, the events of WandaVision take place roughly a month after the end of Endgame. And apparently in that time, Monica, who was snapped by Thanos originally, and she, you know, and comes back in the blip, which can begin to explain how much that name, it's like, God, that's dumb. You know, she somehow gets her government credentials back, and she's back to work inside of a month after this cosmic brain fart that everyone experienced. And the aerospace engineer. Like, yes, I, like so many other fans, was like, oh, please let this be Reed Richards. Let me have this one god, just this one. And no, we didn't get Reed Richards, and I'm okay with that. But how many people are still complaining about that? Or, and it's just the writing thing, like that captain that Monica met before she tries driving the moon buggy through the wall of, you know, Eldritch energy. You guys couldn't just say she's from the Army Corps of Engineers or something? Like, it's such a nitpicky thing, I know, but it just bothers me.
That's part of the whole thing when I originally stated that I thought there was going to be guest characters appearing. And I am disappointed that they didn't do a whole lot of guest characters. That's, I wasn't expecting Reed Richards. I was expecting Doom. Because yeah. Marvel Universe needs a fucking villain. It needs another Loki. It needs another Thanos. And if you want to introduce Doom, now is a good fucking time to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I looked at the list that this one website collected of Marvel characters that would fit the title of aerospace engineer. You had Reed Richards. You had Victor Von Doom. You also had Adam Brashear, the Blue Marvel, which I thought would have been a really cool get, and leave that for, like, further down the way, you know, the living antimatter reactor superhero. The one character, like you see, we bring, like, guest characters. Like, I love Kat Dennings in Two Broke Girls. You know, I love that series. I liked her as Darcy in the Thor movies. She was okay. She brought a little, you know, some levity to the series. I really like seeing Randall Park come back to play Jimmy Woo again. It's kind of surprising, like, from the Ant-Man movies and seeing him on Off the Boat. Like, this is a guy who's got a lot of charisma. He's a great comedian, comedic actor. You know, I don't think they're going to build Jimmy. Sadly, I don't think they're going to build Jimmy up to have him become, like, Jimmy Woo, Agent of Atlas, although that would be pretty awesome if they did.
Agent Atlas, I think they're trying to make him the new Coulson.
I totally agree there, because in the Ant-Man and Wasp movie, Jimmy Woo is slightly antagonistic. Not an asshole, but he is antagonistic. And if anything, I would say that his portrayal as Jimmy Woo very closely mirrors how Phil Coulson was in the first Iron Man, where the Phil Coulson in Iron Man 1 was slightly antagonistic.
Also out of his depth.
There's a callback that not a lot of people notice that I liked as well. In Ant-Man and the Wasp, when Scott is like trapped in the house, he learns how to do magic and shit, and he hands Jimmy Woo a card, and like he just produces it from nowhere. And Jimmy Woo's like, how'd you do that? And Scott tells him the website, and then it shows him later in the movie trying it out. And when he meets Monica, he's like, Jimmy Woo, and he just produces a card from nowhere and hands Monica the card.
Yeah, he learned magic. What I also liked about that was he also picked that lock and did sleight of hand stealing the phone while handcuffed. Mm-hmm. So he big time went to magic school.
Yeah. See, I kind of misread that scene where Hayward's like giving him the snidely whip, says, if you get on board now, I'll cut you in for a good cut. And he's like, nah, the FBI will be here in an hour. And then, I love that he gets I think it takes a little longer to pick handcuffs than that, although I've never watched it live. But, I love that flourish. And then he dials up his buddy at the FBI. Can you get here in an hour? Like, that was some stone cold poker face that Jimmy had, that he's fucking with Hayward like that.
Yeah, and I think Red's absolutely on the money that that Jimmy Woo is going to be the new Phil Coulson.
Yeah. Also, somebody said before, Red, that there is like a blink and you miss it moment referencing Full House at the. It's the theme song bit for the eight Family Ties episode. Like, and I've seen the Matt Shackman, the director, was talking about that. The shot where they're picnicking in the park is supposed to reference that scene from the opening of Full House. But that's
That's fine.
really about it. And well, maybe Sparky the dog, which is both a reference to Full House and Comet, and the Vision miniseries from a few years ago that draws from this series. And that was one thing, I don't know if you guys noticed in the opening sequence to the Bewitched episode, like the second episode, you see like the bones and the helmet of the Grim Reaper in the floorboards during that sequence. Like, that's another thing that a lot of I've seen a lot of fans complaining about. And are we finally gonna meet Simon Williams? And is his brain gonna become like the new mind of version 2 Vision? I did.
I had a theory about Simon Williams. I'm actually kind of glad that they didn't go this way. But when they were getting closer to the modern era, when they were gonna do like the Modern Family-esque episode, I had a theory they're gonna have Wanda split from Vision and start dating a new guy named Simon. This new, like a rock star kind of movie actor kind of guy wearing sunglasses indoors. And I'm kind of glad they didn't do that, but I was just throwing spaghetti at the wall at that point. And
Yeah.
I think also at that point, the fans were predicting was becoming far more entertaining than the actual show became, because it turned out it was Wanda all along, and tiny parentheses Agatha. Now, Red, did you touch on the fact that did you touch on the fact that fake Pietro's name was Boner?
No, I never brought that up.
Okay.
I saw that.
The floor
If
is
he,
yours.
if you know script writing, there's terms in script writing that you, like somebody who's been trained to do, will come up. An FU to the audience, where you go, fuck you, this is a joke, is called a boner.
That is true, Red. Sadly, or, well, not sadly, but I'm pretty sure Ben's with me on this. That is a pretty sure a direct sitcom reference to Kirk Cameron's friend's name from Growing Pains. Because he had that goofy friend that would get in all the weird schemes named Boner.
I don't think that's what it was at all,
No,
because the Family Ties episode was long ago. It was literally a middle finger to the audience. Like, you thought you had Pietro? You thought it was Pietro from a multi-universe? Go fuck yourself.
well, six of one, half dozen the other. When you talk, one fan theory I saw regarding, Evan Peters, everyone said he was going to turn out to be that guy that Jimmy Woo was looking for when we first meet Jimmy in episode 4.
Well,
And
you
that's a
thought it
question we didn't
was,
get answered.
well, you thought it was Pietro, but it was me, Dio.
No, not quite that Byzantine Ben. Just because when we meet Jimmy in episode 4, he's looking for this missing Witsec guy, and we never find out what that's about.
That I feel like that is something that will never come up again. That was because Red noticed it, I noticed it, that the tone of each episode shifts so much. Either each episode was written to be self-contained with a script doctor making sure that there was a cohesive plot line all the way through, but didn't check close enough to make sure that the cohesive plot line didn't have dangling bits. Because, oh boy, does this have dangling bits, and not the whole check out this next Marvel thing to see the dangly bit tied up. No, it's dangly bits as in this scriptwriter wrote this one thing and the other scriptwriter doesn't give a fuck about it.
I think they have that in there and they just decided to fuck it. It's Judy Winslow walking upstairs and never being heard from again.
With Richie's brother?
Yeah.
I think it was just... like, they didn't intend... like, they just wanted a reason for Jimmy to be there. And they didn't even intend on expanding on it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I mean, because it was a mystery, because, oh, we don't know who this person is. They're looking up all the people, and there's this one person that does not have a fucking license, which is Agatha, by the way. That's the person that Jimmy's looking for.
Yeah, there's so many things they could have done with that. There's so many things that they just needed a way to introduce Jimmy Woo, have Jimmy Woo show up, and have everybody be like, okay, I know who this is. This is familiar now. Because this is familiar, I'm not mad. And let me just also add, with the rehabilitation of Jimmy Woo from slightly antagonistic to lovable goof, you know, Jimmy Woo, as he was in Ant-Man and Wasp, I wouldn't say he was anti-superhero, but he was definitely not pro-superhero. Here, he is defending...
I got the impression he was a guy doing his job.
Yeah.
I don't, like, he never said anything about whether he agreed with the Accords or not. He was just following what he was doing, what he was told.
Yeah. Now, just for the whole Witsec thing, if I was writing that scene, if I wanted to make one Marvel name drop for, like, when Monica, so who are you looking for? Oh, I'm looking for this guy, Ken Hale. I would have made that, just make it a reference to Gorilla Man, which was, you know, a reference to Agents of Atlas. Just leave it at that. That's the name I would have used. I wouldn't intend that to be followed up on. It's just a little shout out. Was there any particular Easter egg or call out that you guys thought was, you know, clever or, hey, that was awesome in the series?
There was, but they took it away from me. Like, I was excited. I thought it was awesome. Then somebody came up and said, I'm going to need that. Please give me that. You're not allowed to be excited about this anymore. We're just going to take this and go over here. And that's when Pietro/Peter showed up.
Yeah. Yeah. The one I saw, and this is I noticed it. It was like right there at the tip of my tongue, and I just know how to put it in words. And I saw this on, I think it was Comic Book Resources talking about WandaVision Easter eggs. When they activate version 2 Vision and he comes online, he's got like, they use like the cast off energy from that hex drone to charge his like little arc reactor or whatever that they use to power version 2. But the first thing he does is he looks down, he raises up his left arm and kind of admires it a little bit. And that also, the big thing with this series, everyone was saying it's Mephisto or it's this or it's that. People were saying Ultron, and I thought I would have put money on Ultron being somewhere in the code of Vision.
There is a clue to Ultron.
Yeah, but I mean the whole White left arm thing.
White Vision's eyes match Ultron's eyes until Vision fucking gives him his memories back.
Yeah.
And the other thing to add to that is this was going off of what was said in the Infinity War, where you had Bruce Banner and Tony Stark talking about, if we remove the Mind Stones, there's still Jarvis, there's still Ultron, there's still Tony, there's still me, you know, there's still a whole lot of Vision left. Maybe the best parts if we remove the Mind Stone. So it was always you know, set up to where. To where if you futz with it, there could be some Ultron there. And yeah.
Well, what got me on the Ultron, like watching that episode, is where he looks at his left arm. What was the last Ultron drone missing in Age of Ultron? He was missing his left arm.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was like a I mean, again, I think that's entirely coincidental because, you know, we didn't get Ultron, but I thought that's pretty cool. What if they use that? And it's like, you know, this is Ultron. And I knew once you got the first few rounds of two heroes fight each other and then they go their separate ways, I thought, okay, he's an android, a synthezoid. He's got this supercomputer for a brain.
Before we go too far off of the left arm thing,
mm-hmm.
I think that was actually a Paul Bettany choice. I don't think that was in the script. I think Paul Bettany did that.
Paul Bettany is left-handed, I believe.
Okay, but, yeah, no, that's cool. I didn't think of that.
I think he probably remembered what happened, because when he's acting, he's not acting in front of, like, nothing. He's actually... I can't remember the actor who played Ultron.
James Spader. By the way, JT, your audio is bleeding through.
Nope, I'm just using my phone again, Ben. That's all.
He's acting in front of James Spader, and he would have known that James Spader was sitting there, like, his arms limp and stuff like that. And that was probably a reference. Like, he remembered that moment and then said, decided to.
Yeah. No. When Hex Vision and Version 2 fight, I was like, yeah, we're going to get a bit of a slobber knocker. But I think, I forget when I first thought of it watching that last episode. I was like, no, he's going to finish this fight, not win the fight, but finish the fight with a logic bomb. And it does, and he, not one that I'm terribly familiar with, but I appreciate what they did with, you know, if you have this ship and you replace the wood, and at what point is it still the ship or is it a whole new thing? And he's like, I can give you access to his memories. I mean, we're not going to get, again, version 2 isn't just going to become Paul Bettany's vision. He has access to these memories. He has no emotional tie to them, which is, again, going back to the inspiration of White Vision out of Vision Quest in the West Coast Avengers comics.
Well, again, it's I had a theory about this, kind of glad my theory was wrong, but the Vision has at times was able to combine himself with other people through phasing. This is how he kind of created evil Hank Pym Ultron, who's still around, by the way. Thank you, Marvel, the gift that keeps giving. So I sort of envisioned the two visions phasing into a single new vision.
I mean, that's a little too easy.
Kind of glad they didn't, because as you said, it was too easy, but it was also, you have to admit, if they did it would have been highly telegraphed, but I mean, the one thing we have to remind ourselves when we watch this is, even with the best of views at Wanda, like if we look at Wanda through Monica Rambeau's eyes of, I understand this woman is grieving. If I was in this position, I would do everything to bring my mother back. And first and foremost, let's heal this woman versus Punisher. That's great and fine and very compassionate. I understand that. But at the same time, look at Wanda through the townspeople's eyes.
Oh, no. Yeah. They're all scared.
She's a monster to them. She'll never not be a monster to them. One of the things that disappointed me is she should have apologized.
No, she just should have
said
off.
Something.
She sort of shared an awkward glance.
Like, I don't expect them to ever forgive her. She will always be a monster to them.
But she should have asked. She should have...
Yeah. Like, she should have at least acknowledged it and said, I'm sorry for what I did to you.
Yeah. Not even trying to explain it. Just said, I did this. I'm sorry. I own it. You can never forgive me, but I am letting you know that I feel grief over what I did. But instead, it feels like, other than people giving her long glances, she's got away kind of scot-free in this.
Yeah. I mean, the words, like what she was saying to Monica, and Monica, if I had your power, I would have tried to bring your mom back, like you mentioned, Ben. That would have been better served to have Monica and the town, like the townspeople coming for Wanda and Monica getting in the way and you know, have a moment like that where she, I'm sorry, I can never take this back. I can never make amends for this. But instead, they just have it all in that. I think that's, you know, not directing, but definitely the script. Like, that was a mistake not to have that moment. Instead, we get this.
There were lots of moments like that that felt like they tried to start something, but because they had the scene in Salem with the witch, with the witches, and you think, oh, witches, you know, pitchforks, etc. But you know, they didn't even go there. It was a lot of missed opportunities here, or more than likely this. The beginning half of this show is very stretched out, very lazy, lackadaisical. We have a whole episode. We can do it. We can do a 1940s sitcom. Let's put in some fake commercials. Let's have some fun with this. Let's just keep on shoveling more. And then when we get to the last three episodes, it's like, holy shit, we're running out of time. Okay, we got to condense this. Okay, well, what about this explanation? Jettison it. Forget it. What about these scenes? Forget it.
Yeah, I mean, you could have made it, I think, to give, have enough room for the whole sitcom premise and then the events of, like, the last three episodes, like, six episodes, like, have, you know, you trim a lot of the fat, but I think there is at least enough meat there for six episodes. What I want to ask you guys now, who is your favorite actor in the series or actress?
Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany is fantastic. Amen.
And I think my favorite bits with Paul Bettany were in the black and white episodes. Like, I don't know if you guys read, our listeners might be interested to know, they actually got the Dick Van Dyke to consult on, like, the first couple of episodes, which that's just, mwah, chef's kiss. It's like, if you have access to a man like Dick goddamn Van Dyke, like, hell yes. And I just love Paul Bettany's performance in, like, the sitcom bits in those first two episodes, because he is channeling Dick Van Dyke. He's channeling...
Father Knows Best kind of stuff?
Well, Father Knows Best, and...
He didn't do the thing with the teeth, though.
Yeah.
Well, because Dick Van Dyke always clenches and kind of rubs his teeth.
He's got a he had a... Don't know what they look like now. I haven't seen the man in years, but he did have a magnificent set of choppers. But... Like, it's the little bits, like, tripping in that, and I don't know, I laughed the whole time, but it was kind of a pity laugh to watching drunk Paul Bettany in the second episode, because Vision swallowed some gum, and that gummed up his works.
Again, I feel, like, Paul Bettany did a great job of what he had. The other standout to me is Tiana Paris, the woman who played Monica Rambeau. I think she did a great job with what she was given, and I think that this is a great way they can replace the less popular Brie Larson as Captain Marvel, as they should. I also really feel like the whole of the first three, four episodes, I'm going to keep touching on this because it still bugs me just how spread out they feel versus the last three episodes. Like, it's like lazy, lackadaisical, and holy shit, oh my God, we gotta get this wrapped up. I almost feel like this was written as 10 episodes when it was rewritten as a TV series, and then rewritten again to... Nine episodes.
I don't think it was written as 10 episodes. Like I said, I detect a movie script.
Well, I detect don't agree.
That they can't. So, like, somebody wrote a Scarlet Witch movie and got denied. Said, hey, we can repurpose this into a TV series and stretch it out way too fucking much.
Yeah. I think when they stretched it out, it was written as 10 because, Marvel said, no, you're getting 9, and they didn't want to shuffle things again. So they just crammed everything in the last two episodes that were supposed to be 3 episodes. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
One other thing, one last thing I want to ask you guys. What do you think is the most bullshit, butt-pull, lazy thing the writers had in this series? And before you answer, mine was Wanda after, like, a five-minute conversation and this fight with Agatha just scrawling these random runes on the walls of the Hex. And, like, I think even with whatever little training she would have had to have gone to use those properly, she kind of has to understand. I mean, did she just write those? Were there some runes on Agatha's ceiling in the basement that we didn't see that she just, like, you know, graffitis those in energy, and all of a sudden Agatha's undone?
But that, what that's called in script writing is a Chekhov's gun, because it was because Agatha shows the runes, and then Wanda uses the runes. It's another old writing tool, but one thing that people,
that's not a Chekhov's gun. Chekhov's gun is when you show something, like say somebody has a poisoned pen, okay, and if they're gonna stab somebody, and they'll, with the pen, they'll die. And it never gets used. Ever.
No, Chekhov's gun is when it is used.
No, it's not. It's when it's not used.
I'm going to check that later, but again, I feel like the runes was set up, payoff is what it was, and that's the term I'm going to use for now while we check that. But the one thing I do have to add is I feel like there was a tiny, tiny, tiny callback to The Incredibles.
Okay. Really?
Yes. In the final episode where you have Wanda, the twins, and Vision sort of stand off, the standoff pose is very close to the pose in The Incredibles where the family reunites on the island and they face the machines.
Maybe? I think that's just hugely coincidental, but maybe.
I think it's not coincidental. I leave that to you guys to, but I think that's an Incredibles callback.
Yeah. Now, sorry, you go, Red.
We're talking about the biggest assholes here.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and this is going to be very controversial, everybody thinks it's brilliant and stuff like that, that suddenly the bad guy has white Vision the whole time.
Yeah,
that was. And Vision's been fake this whole time.
Yeah, that was super bullshit because it feels like they intended that to actually really be Vision, at least for the first third. The other thing to add is Vision was in literal pieces, like. Literally, he was like eight piles of garbage, and we're supposed to believe that the second that Wanda shows up and makes a fake town, he was like, okay, put them back together, and they were able to do it in like a week.
Well,
and get them running.
We're also supposed to believe that anything in the MCU, I mean, it's not completely outside the realm of possibility in a world of super soldiers, guys in armored suits, and
they had Goliaths, so. They had Vision corpse, shall we say, for 5 years. Five fucking years. And you think that with, like, the world in chaos after the snap, that no one's going to be like, hey, let's get this thing working again. The government's caring about too much other shit right now to care about us doing this. But they just sit there, do nothing with their thumbs up their ass, tearing them apart with grinders and shit. And now he's in like eight separate pieces. Wanda shows up and then builds a town. And they're like, oh, we got 1 week. Let's put it back together.
I actually have a theory about that.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
That wasn't the real Vision's corpse. If we have got such a cartoony, by-the-numbers, mustache-twirling villain in Hayward, why wouldn't he already have white vision? Like, literally, the only problem they had with that thing was they didn't know how to turn it on. So I think I posit that they already had version 2 assembled. They could not just power it up, but they knew Wanda was coming.
That goes contrary.
Hold on, Ben. Now, this is going to be surprising, and JT is probably going to have a turd sideways after I say this, but I agree with him. Because they show fucking Vision being taken apart, and they show a guy grinding Vision.
Yes.
And you see a grinding weld suddenly appear. That wouldn't happen with fucking vibranium.
Yeah. One thing I will add, though, would this not make the whole logic puzzle of the Theseus' ship moot? Because neither are the original parts now.
Well, that's part of the logic puzzle there.
No, the logic puzzle is one of them has to be the original parts.
Well, that's part of the logic. It's like, you know, eventually you replace so...
I don't think, Ben, you understand. White Vision is the original parts.
Okay. So we're saying
that the broken-down version of Vision...
is a like show.
The one that's been taken apart that Wanda showed up and had a look at was fake.
Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot more fucking sense. You're right. That makes a lot more sense.
One sec. As far as the logic thing goes, we're also missing one thing here is, you know, Wanda was empowered by the Mind Stone. You know, Vision was created from the Mind Stone. You know, I think when it exploded, like the first time she destroyed him before Thanos wound back time, you know, she has this mental impression of Vision in her power allowed her to recreate Vision like that. Like, not completely, but there was enough of him there that, you know, I'm not the real Vision. You're not the real Vision. Because to say version 2 is the real Vision, well, he's not all there. Literally, his mind isn't there. All he has is the memories. He doesn't, like I said before, doesn't have that attachment to them.
Now, the one thing I will add to that is that makes a lot more sense that the, quote, corpse is a fake they put there.
There's like an honest clue in that scene. Like I said, when that guy's grinding it.
Yeah.
I think he fucked up when he did that. Like, it was to show the audience, this isn't the Vision's corpse.
Now, the other thing I have to add is, we saw the real Vision's corpse in Infinity War, and this isn't a case of let's put some polish on it and change the tires. It's like his head was caved in, and his head was made of vibranium. There's lots of vibranium
plot holes.
Yes.
Because Vision died in Wakanda, as if the fucking Wakandans are going to let him leave.
Yeah.
As if they're going to let fucking, as the director said, $30 billion of vibranium leave the fucking country of Wakanda.
Yeah. Wakanda doesn't trade vibranium. And Wakanda is also one of the few countries that would actually honor the Vision's wishes to be, what was that again? Fucking buried.
We're also talking about a guy who ignored the Sokovia Accords to go about setting up his own little fiefdom with whatever, you know, technology he could get his hands on. While, again, what Red said before, building fucking sentinels in that building there.
Like, people, you look at the, like, there's legs, so you don't see much. You just see legs, and that's a fucking sentinel he's building behind her.
Yeah, that ain't no rocket booster, folks.
But anyways, let's touch on the last topic I want to talk about this, because this is something that Red brought up, and I've noticed it too. But let's be very brief on this. Let's talk about the shills.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when WandaVision first started, there was a lot of these theory YouTubers that all seem to know enough to not only give knowledge, but also put in red herrings. Like, pretty much all of them said, Agatha Harkness, Agatha Harkness, Agatha Harkness. One of the reasons why is there's a certain breed of fan of the MCU, of people who didn't read comics like you or I, but like the movies, and not saying that there should be a barrier of entry for the movies. Of course, like the movies. The movies are fantastic. Yeah. Enjoy them.
You shouldn't gatekeep. You should just watch the fucking movies.
Exactly. Exactly. But there's also a level of fan that wants to pretend that they have super secret knowledge that the, quote, normies don't. So what they do is they watch a lot of these YouTube videos like Variant Comics and these other guys that condense storylines and knowledge as like a 2-minute video. And a lot of them were pushing Agatha Harkness, Agatha Harkness, Agatha Harkness. And now all of a sudden they're like, see, I knew it was Agatha Harkness. See, I knew it. And that's sort of what they were trying to foster is like those fans that feel more knowledgeable about that.
Well, I'm not saying there weren't shills. I don't think every person that made a WandaVision series video was a shill. But yeah, but they're like, I have my own issues with guys like Variant Comics. I think they come from a place of actual passion for the medium. It's
I have nothing wrong with what they do. It's but at the same time, it's like,
well,
go ahead, Ben.
I don't think it's as negative as you're trying to say. It's a form of advertisement these days.
Yes.
There's a reason why YouTubers aren't called YouTubers. They're called influencers now. It's because they're paid to influence people. And that's what I think a lot of them happened. Like, nobody knew shit about fucking Agatha Harkness.
Yeah.
Your average Joe who watches the movies, doesn't read the fucking comics, doesn't play the video games, just watches the fucking movies, would have no fucking clue who Agatha Harkness is. So you'll have to inform them somehow.
And I'll even take it one step further. The regular comic book reader who reads, let's say, 3 to 5 titles a month probably would not know who Agatha Harkness was either, because we're talking about a character that showed up in like the 80s and has sparingly few appearances since then. And it's, again, nothing like wrong with knowledge.
Most popular time she ever showed up was in that Spider-Man fucking animated series.
That was Madame Web.
She showed up as well.
Oh.
They both showed up.
Okay. I'm going to have to check that, but...
okay. I know you're talking about Madame Web is voiced by Stan Lee's late wife.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I think Agatha Harkness first showed up somewhere in the 70s. Very late 60s, early 70s, something like that. I know at one point she was Franklin Richards' nanny in Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he also gave birth to, she gave birth to Nick Scratch, who then gave birth to this villainous group called the Salem Seven. Yeah, I mean, overall, I really did enjoy this series. There is bits and pieces wrong with it. I think on the whole, it's fairly well put together. It's a decent show. I would recommend it to fans of the MCU, comic book fans. You know, if you look for the Easter eggs, you'll enjoy that too. But I don't see, other than dyed-in-the-wool comic fans or MCU fans, I don't think there's going to be, you know, going back to our last episode, there isn't a lot of rewatchability here.
No. No, absolutely not.
Before we wrap this up, I'd like to know, what is the biggest disappointment in the show that you guys had?
That it was just Wanda and Agatha Harkness, that the predictions from the very get-go were, that's all it was. There was no darkness, there was no Mephisto, there was no... There was no Stephen Strange appearance. Like, have Stephen Strange appear at the very end would have been amazing and awesome and fun, but because this is a problem that Marvel, the MCU, is going to continually have the bigger the MCU gets, is the constant question of why isn't blank here? Shouldn't blank be here? This is a threat big enough for blank to show up.
It's not just that. Like, Stephen Strange, his job, it is literally stated in the fucking movie that he's in, that his job is to protect the fucking world from magical threats.
Yes. Protect reality, dick. But, yeah.
And he should have showed up, in my opinion.
Yeah. It feels really, again, it's, this is tailor-made for Stephen Strange to show up, Doctor Strange to show up, and he doesn't. Other than a reference to the Sorcerer Supreme from the book, there is nothing there. And again,
well, that was from Agatha, not the book.
She read it from the book. More powerful than even the Sorcerer Supreme. She read that from the fucking book. But anyways, the other thing I have to add is I really think the more movies we have and the bigger the MCU gets, the why isn't blank here question is going to show up more often. JT, your thoughts?
I already said one of the things I was the most disappointed with in the series was the casting of Evan Peters. Not that I thought he's a bad actor. Like I said, he did good. It's just blatant emotional manipulation of the comic reading fan base or movie going fan base. I don't know of any other reason other than legitimate stunt casting. And like you said, this is some at the very end, if not, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch himself, have Wong show up or, you know, and have him fumble.
Have Mordo show up, because Mordo's whole fucking, at the end of Doctor Strange, he's like, there's too many sorcerers. I'm going to take them all out.
Yeah, I'm going to steal everyone's magic. And
or just like I said, have Wong show up and have him fumble to get coins, which would have been my callback to, you know, I wouldn't say no to a tuna melt from Infinity War, and have him call the doc and say, yeah, we got a problem or something like that. I would have done that and take out that whole Monica and the Skrull agent and have her up there moment, because I don't know why. Like, I'm looking forward to what they do with the Skrulls and Nick Fury and Secret Invasion, but that whole mid-credit scene just kind of pissed me off. Although, I did like the revelation that the cotton candy truck was like that big Hummer-type vehicle, because it didn't make sense for me to have that thing ram Hayward's Hummer and have it, you know, punch its shit in like that.
One of the biggest disappointments for me was actually the last end credit, where it shows
Wanda
in the cabin. That to me was like such a fucking wasted opportunity. You could have had a famous actor like, say, Viggo Mortensen appear. Him drinking coffee alone in this fucking cabin. And him kind of like get up and go notice that one of the boards in his cabin is loose and walk over to get another cup of coffee, and then you see two nails just suddenly embed themselves into the wall and straighten out the board.
Oh, that would be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But again, that ties to the whole, you know, Marvel doesn't want to define who mutants are until 5 years. But I think we pretty much summed everything up. This year's Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.